Hare Krishna, everyone. Welcome to Bhakti Sangha Jepa conference call. Today we are very fortunate to have His Grace Balram Shakti Prabhu to enlighten us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th Canto, 5th Chapter, 26th Verse. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, I don't see you on the video.
Hare Krishna Mataji. Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much, Prabhu.
I am sorry, Mataji. I am not able to hear you. Just give me a second. Maybe there is a problem.
Okay, Prabhuji.
Can you please speak, Mataji? I just want to check.
Yeah. Hare Krishna Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances.
Mataji, I will have to leave and join back again. There is some problem. Just give me 2 minutes.
Sure,
I'll just
Prabhupada.
Leave and join back.
So we can pause the recording. Is there anybody who would like to introduce themselves? By then, Prabhuji will be joining back.
Hare Krishna.
Were you able to hear us, Prabhuji? Hare Krishna Prabhu, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now, Mataji. Can you hear me?
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, please accept my humble obeisances. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Thank you so much, Prabhu, for your valuable time and association this morning and enlightening us on the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. I now hand over the call to you, Prabhu. Please take over. Hare Krishna.
Thank you very much. I apologize for joining a little late. Actually, I joined on time, but I had some problem with my earphones. I had to fix it. So I had to leave and rejoin again. So thank you all very much for giving me this opportunity to share Srimad Bhagavatam with all of you. So we will just start with the invocation prayers. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Preshtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschata Desha Tarini Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So we will today start discussing from the 5th chapter of the 6th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. We will chant the verse, the translation, and then the purport by Srila Prabhupada, and then we will see what we can discuss from here. So this is, you all know the storyline, you have been hearing it for a long time. So this is about Narada Muni has already sent the Haryashvas to the path of liberation. So Daksha is upset. So Daksha begets another set of 1,000 sons. They are the Shavalashvas. So Daksha, being a very pious personality, is understanding the importance of austerities in leading a very proper life. He sends them again to perform austerities. So that is the storyline right now. So we will chant the verse, read the translation and purport, and then we will see what we can learn. Okay. So here, Srila Sukadeva Goswami continues the narration. Tad upasparshana deva vinirduta malashayaha japanto brahma paramam tepus tatpra mahattapaha. At the Narayana Saras, the second group of sons performed penances in the same way as the first. They bathed in the water, and by its touch, all the dirty material desires in their hearts were cleansed away. They murmured mantras beginning with Omkara and underwent a severe course of austerities. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Srila Prabhupada writes here that every Vedic mantra is called Brahma because each mantra is preceded by the Brahmakshara. Om or Omkara. For example, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Pranavahas Sarva Vedeshu. In all the Vedic mantras, I am represented by Pranava or Omkara. Thus, chanting of the Vedic mantras beginning with Omkara is directly chanting of Krishna's name. There is no difference. Whether one chants Omkara or addresses Lord Krishna as the Krishna, the meaning is the same. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has recommended that in this age, one chant the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. Although there is no difference between Hare Krishna and the Vedic mantras, beginning with Omkara, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the leader of the spiritual movement of this age, has recommended that one chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So that is the purport. Actually, if you remember 2 weeks back when I shared, we did discuss on this theme of certain things about not exactly the jiva fall down. I was anyway not going to resolve that issue in the previous session. But there are certain gray areas. That is why there is so much discussion. Having said that, there are many areas which are not gray, which are actually black and white in understanding the nature of devotional service, the nature of the jiva, which are not actually gray, but they're actually black and white. So I just wanted to discuss last time my intention for poking that particular subject matter, even though I knew it was quite sensitive topic. The purpose was actually to present an understanding of what is black and white and clear from the scriptures in that particular area and what is gray. I was anyway not going to resolve the gray area because that would mean taking sides. But what was clearly black and white based on the writings of our acharyas, I wanted to present that clearly. Because many times, because we are told that it is a gray area, it is a gray area. Many times we refuse to understand, what is actually clearly presented about that subject matter also. Not exactly the verdict as such, but certain things in terms of, like I mentioned, the nature of bhakti, what is this bhakti shakti, whom does it belong to? What is the jiva? What is the jiva shakti? What is the difference between the antaranga shakti and the tatastha shakti? And what is the connection? What kind of shakti is bhakti? There are many things which are very clearly black and white in this discussion. I wanted to touch and elaborate on the areas which are actually black and white and clear. Clearly presented in the Shastras. But having said that, in retrospect, I thought about this subject matter, that it is certainly a sensitive area, and probably the forum is not, I would say, I mean, this is a very august forum, as I always felt this is one of the most sincere devotees I've ever seen. And I always feel very, very inspired to come and share Bhagavatam in this forum. But having said that, considering the nature of the subject matter, because a lot of discussion has already happened over this and there is a history to it. So I thought maybe it is little sensitive to touch the subject matter here, even though, you know, we are not going to touch the gray areas at all. But having said that, but still, you know, there are a lot of emotions connected to this particular subject matter, which I don't want to unnecessarily play with devotees' emotions. So today, maybe some devotees are a little disappointed because many, at least a few of them, that we are waiting for the second part of this. So I may have to disappoint them that today I'm planning to talk on a different topic today, but which is very relevant to the subject we are discussing. Because the previous verse spoke about the previous verse that I had spoken, I think it was maybe 6.5.13, I guess. It spoke on the, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada spoke about Yad Gatvana Nivartante. And then in that allegorical presentation also, Narada Muni spoke about that hole having gone into which one never returns back like that. That was speaking about the spiritual world, Vaikuntha. And then taking a cue from there, I just spoke about the nature of, you know, that whole subject matter. But I do respecting that there are a lot of strong sentiments connected to that particular subject matter. I will today speak on a slightly different topic today. So today we will discuss on the topic of why did Narada Muni do whatever he did to the Hariyashvas and then to the Shavalashvas as well. I mean, many times in our understanding, we often very loosely hear about Narada Muni. We say that they say Narada Kalahapriya. So Narada is very, very much interested and, you know, he is very much interested in Kalaha, in creating some kind of sort of problems or fight between people. So was that the purpose, you know, like why did Narada Muni have to do it? You know, already Daksha was very much upset with Narada Muni. Why did he have to do it again to the Shavalashvas? So this is the subject matter that we are going to talk about. Specifically, the case of Narada Muni doing it to Hariyashvas and Chavalashvas, and more generically, the theme of guidance according to one's adhikar. So the word adhikar can be translated as qualification. Okay, guidance should be according to one's qualification. So we will talk on this subject matter because in that particular purport, in one of the purports, Srila Prabhupada himself directly says that Narada Muni saw that the boys known as the Hariyashvas were already purified because of living in that holy place and were practically ready for liberation. This is a very important point. Narada Muni very clearly saw a qualification in the Hariyashvas for liberation. Why then should they be encouraged to become entangled in family life, which is so dark that once having entered it, one cannot leave it? Okay. So, of course, it's not exactly family life in the sense being completely attached to material comforts. So, as I had mentioned in one of the sessions, I don't know which one it was. What is that verse? Nidraya Ayur Harati Vaipumsam Udyannas. What is that? Griheshu Grihamedinam. So, there in the second canto, Srila Shukadeva Goswami criticizes the Grihamedis. So the Grihamedis means one whose life. Medhi means, you know, the word Medhi comes, one of the meanings is there is a Medhi Stambha. So Medhi Stambha is that in which a cow is tied. Okay. A cow is tied and the cow comes around that Medhi Stambha or that pole and grazes all that, all the grass that is available within that particular radius. So basically a Griha Medhi is one who, for whom the Griha or the house is that Medhi Stambha. So he keeps, his thought process keeps rotating around the house and it does not go beyond that. It certainly does not go in the direction of liberation. Okay. So in the, in this case, so a Griha Medhi does not necessarily mean a householder alone. Okay. So in order to clarify this, once Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wrote an article in the Sajjana Toshani with the topic of, you know, like Matastha and Matamedi, you know, just like Grihastha and Grihamedi. So he was talking about Matastha and Matamedi. So who is a Matastha? Who is qualified to stay in a Mata? In a Mata means an ashram, right? And who is a Matamedi? So a Matamedi is one who may be staying in an ashram or a temple in today's day and age language, if you want to use. But his thought process is not revolving around Krishna, but it is revolving around his own comforts and other such material things. So therefore, a Griha Medhi need not necessarily refer only to those who are married. So that does not indicate an ashram as such, but it indicates a mentality which is not very conducive for Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So one may be in the householder ashram, but their life may be centered around Krishna. But one may be in the brahmacharya ashram or maybe celibate, but his life may not necessarily be rotating, revolving around Krishna. It may be revolving around his own, you know, gratification, his own comforts, facilities, like that. So therefore, in one sense, when there are, even if you take in Bhagavatam, there are as many exemplary householders who have perfected their lives, as much as, you know, exemplary renunciants also. So certainly, this is not a criticism about family life. It is more about what one's consciousness is revolving around, like that. Yes, but that is not the point. So here Srila Prabhupada says, Narada Muni saw that the boys known as the Hariyashvas were already purified because of living in that holy place and were practically ready for liberation. So when he saw that they were ready for liberation, he was seeing why to engage them in the path of karma. So the path of karma will bind one to this material world, which is what Daksha was recommending that they do. Get married, beget children, and expand the population. So generally, actually the, what do you call these are called as prajapatis, you know, Daksha prajapatis. So the prajapatis are, their assigned duty is to get married and expand the population. These are not ordinary personalities. You know, at one shot, they could beget thousands of children, human or non-human, or any other species. That was their specific duty. Okay. But Narada Muni, he here clearly saw, and such people generally have qualification for karma. they had karmanishta generally. But here Narada Muni clearly saw in both the Haryashvas and Shavalashvas a higher qualification. They had the qualification to aspire directly for liberation. Generally, by practice of karma, the heart becomes purified. And when the heart becomes purified, then one engages on the path of jnana and then aspires for liberation. But here in this Haryashvas and Shavalashvas, Narada Muni already saw people who were ready for pursuing liberation. So he thought these people are overqualified for the job which Daksha wants to get done out of them. So therefore, he guided them according to their qualification. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur also commenting on this verse. He says, not on this verse, on that particular verse, when Narada Muni recommended the Haryashvas first to go and pursue the path of liberation. Talking about that, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes in that purport, why should these sons, pure-hearted and qualified for liberation, take the path of karma on the order of their father? So after giving them confidential teachings, I will liberate them. Thus, the merciful Narada spoke enigmatic metaphorical words to them. Okay. So this is what he also thought. Narada Muni thought this way. So therefore, today we will discuss on this topic of what the Shastras speak about giving guidance or giving instructions, how it should only be according to one's qualification. Okay, so we will take a particular section of Bhagavad Gita and we will try to understand the subject matter, and then we will see a little bit more from Srimad Bhagavatam also. So Arjuna, in the beginning of third chapter, he presents a doubt. Okay, so about contradictory guidance. So Arjuna presents a doubt about contradictory guidance. So if you see in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in verse number 2.47 and other such verses, Krishna directly instructed Arjuna to engage in karma. More specifically, Nishkama Karma Yoga. He said, karmanyevadikaraste mafale shukadachana ma karmafala heturbur mate sangostu akarmani. So engage in your varnashram prescribed duties, but don't be attached to the material fruits that may come from the from performance of those duties. And don't be attached to, don't think that you are the cause of getting the fruits. And don't be attached to not performing your duties also. Mate sangostu akarmani. So do your duties, don't be attached to the fruits. Krishna clearly told Arjuna. This was a direct instruction to Arjuna. Having said that, starting from verse number 2.55 to 2.72, okay, Krishna glorified jnana. Okay. By glorifying a person who has accepted the path of jnana. Stita pragyasya kabasha samadhistasya keshava. Stita dirkim prabhasheta kimasita vrajeta kim. Arjuna asked this question about the stita pragya. Who is that one who is fixed in the path of jnana? And then he glorifies that person in many, many different verses. He dukkeshu anudvignamana sukeshu vigata spriha vitaraga bayak krodha siddhir muni ruchyate. Like that, in so many verses, Krishna glorifies the person who is qualified for jnana. And very clearly Krishna establishes that how jnana is superior to karma. So he has very clearly established jnana to be superior to karma, but at the same time, Krishna directly asks Arjuna to engage in karma only. At this point of time, Arjuna has a very relevant question. Arjuna asks Krishna in the beginning of the third chapter, Jayasi chet karmanaste mata buddhir janardana kim karmani ghore mam niyojayasi keshava. So he says, te mata, O Arjuna, if O Krishna, if it is your opinion, karmanaha buddhi jayasi chet, if it is your opinion that intelligence is superior to action, or in one sense, jnana is superior to karma. If this is your opinion, then, O Janardana, kim mam niyojayasi tad ghore karmani? Then why are you engaging me in this terrible action by telling me karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phaleshu kadachana? Why are you asking me to engage in karma when, according to you, jnana is superior to karma? If jnana is superior to karma, then you should engage me in jnana. Why are you engaging me in karma? Right? Because I would like to engage in an activity which is better. Why engage in an activity which is inferior? So this was the question asked by Arjuna to Krishna. So if intelligence, if fixed intelligence, buddhi, or bhakti, which is transcending the gunas, is superior, then why do you engage me in this terrible action in the form of war? And for me, action means war. I have to fight. I have to kill my own relatives. I have to kill my own guru. Tat kim mam niyojayasi tat ghore karman. Why you are engaging me in this ghastly warfare, as Srila Prabhupada writes. Right? So then, in the next verse, he says, Yamishreneva vakyena buddhim mohaya sivame tad ekam vada nischitya yena shreyoham apnyan. My dear Krishna, you are bewildering me with this contradictory instructions. Vyamishreneva vakyena buddhim mohaya sivame tad ekam vada nischitya yena shreyoham apnyan. So therefore, tell me one thing. On one hand, you are telling jnana is better. On another hand, you are telling asking me to do karma. I don't get it. Get why you are asking me to do something which is inferior, which you yourself deem to be inferior. Why you are engaging me in an inferior action? Why don't you engage me in the superior path of jnana? Right? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, commenting on this in his purport, he says, you bewilder my intelligence by those words which are a mixture of various meanings. Though you have mentioned about action, karmanyeva adhikaraste, but you also glorify jnana. You know, in various verses, Krishna, in verses like Yadate moha kalilam buddhir gatitarishyati tadaganta sinirvedam shrutavyascha shrutashyacha. So in such statements in the second chapter, Krishna glorified the path of jnana. When you are really intelligent, then you will not be interested in karma, he says. So which means intelligent people do not practice karma. After telling like that, you are asking me to practice karma, which means you are telling I am unintelligent. So Arjuna says, I am not unintelligent, I am intelligent. I am not attached to this karma. I am willing to give this up right now. Why you are not allowing me? This is the question of Arjuna. So this is where Krishna is going to introduce, for the first time in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is going to introduce the concept of adhikar or qualification. Okay. So here he is going to tell karma or jnana is not a question of choice, but it is a question of qualification. Okay. So karma or jnana is not a question of choice, it is a question of qualification. So just because something is better does not mean you have the qualification to engage in it. So especially for a person who does not have qualification, if someone has qualification for jnana, he can engage in karma for setting the right example. That is not a problem. But for someone who is qualified for karma, if he has no qualification for jnana, he cannot engage in it. So Krishna starts by explaining to Arjuna, Lokesmin dvividha nishta pura prokta mayanagha jnana yogena sankhyanam karma yogena yoginam. So Krishna says that maya pura prokta, you know, whatever I have spoken to you in the previous chapter, you should understand that there are dvividha nishta. I actually mentioned about people with two types of qualification, but you did not understand it clearly. I am going to speak about this more clearly now, Krishna says. So there are people with two kinds of qualification, people who are qualified for karma yoga and people who are qualified for jnana yoga. Of course, there are other qualities, you know, there are people qualified for bhakti yoga, there are people qualified for ashtanga yoga. But because Krishna has not introduced other practices till now, while we are in the third chapter, Krishna has till now introduced only karma yoga and jnana yoga to Arjuna. So, therefore, Krishna is telling, look, Arjuna, there are people with two types of qualification till now. Okay. So, he says, so here the word nishta means adhikar. Okay. Or qualification. So, henceforward, when we are going to discuss, when I use the word, I may use the word nishta or adhikar or qualification. So in this session, I will be using them synonymously. So whether I say nishta, I will say karma nishta, bhakti nishta, yoga nishta, like that, or karma adhikar, jnana adhikar, bhakti adhikar, like that, or qualified for karma, qualified for jnana, qualified for bhakti, like that. It means the same. Okay. So here Krishna uses the word nishta. In the previous chapter, Krishna uses the word adhikar. Karmanyeva adhikaraste. So Krishna also uses these terminologies interchangeably. Nishta, adhikar, and here it's translated as qualification. Okay. So Krishna says there are people with two kinds of qualification. Jnana yogena sankhyanam. Those qualified for jnana are known as practitioners of jnana yoga. So those qualified for jnana, they practice jnana yoga. Okay. Karma yogena yoginam. And those who are qualified for karma, they practice karma yoga. So it is not a question of choice. It's not a question of which is better. It is a question of what you are qualified for. Okay. So here the Lord answers, Shri Vishnu Chakradhakur commenting on this, he says, you have asked me to indicate clearly one of either karma yoga or jnana yoga, since I have explained both in an impartial way. The two processes that I have explained are for persons qualified for karma and jnana according to different circumstances. It is not that these people are equally suitable for liberation. So people qualified for karma and people qualified for jnana, even though they are not equally qualified for liberation, right? So the one, you can say, okay, yeah, let me go ahead and then maybe I will introduce that concept a little later. This is now explained in two verses. I have explained in the previous chapter two types of qualification. For those engaged in knowledge, who have risen to the state of knowledge by purity of the heart, there is steadiness in jnana yoga. That is their limited field. Okay. So now let me explain to you the yoga ladder. Okay. So let us describe the yoga ladder. Let us understand the yoga ladder the way it is be understood actually. Let me just add a slide here so that we can just quickly go over it. Okay, so we are going to now discuss yoga ladder. I will try to keep it as simple as possible. On the bottommost of the yoga ladder is Sakama Karma Yoga. So Sakama Karma Yoga is performed for escaping sinful life. Okay. And by practice of Sakama Karma Yoga, one earns piety. And escapes sinful life. So when one practices Sakama Karma Yoga, then one slowly develops some level of detachment where he comes to the platform of Nishkama Karma Yoga. So Nishkama Karma Yoga, even at the Sakama Karma Yoga level, the goal of the practitioner is still some material pleasures. Okay. At the stage of Nishkama Karma Yoga, the goal is liberation. Okay. So this person's goal is liberation, but the problem is that the heart is impure. Heart is impure with material anarthas. Okay, so a Nishkama Karma Yogi, you can say, in the, if you want to draw a parallel between the mixed path, the path of liberation and the path of Krishna Prema, a Nishkama Karma Yogi would be something like a sadhaka. So sadhaka is like us, our goal is Krishna Prema, but we still have many anarthas within our heart, which are troubling us. So similarly, a Nishkama Karma Yoga, his goal is also liberation. But he cannot immediately pursue the practices of jnana, because or meditation on Brahman and all those things, because his heart is not yet purified. So he has to practice his varnashram duties to purify his heart. Okay, so Nishkama Karma Yogi, so what does he earn? He earns purification of heart. Okay, so then he comes to the stage of what is called as Jnana Yoga. So a Jnana Yogi, his aim is also liberation. Okay. His aim is also liberation, but he has a pure heart. A heart which is purified of all material and anarthas. So he practices Jnana Yoga, and what does he earn? He earns self-realization. Okay. So then, once one achieves self-realization, then one comes to the stage of Ashtanga Yoga. Okay. So, an Ashtanga Yogi also has a purified heart. Okay. And his goal is also liberation. Okay. And by practice of Ashtanga Yoga, he achieves Paramatma realization. Okay. Then he becomes qualified for liberation. Okay. So you can see, in one sense, Nishkama Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga are all different rungs on the same ladder which leads one to liberation actually. Okay. Nishkama Karma Yogi, Jnana Yogi, Ashtanga Yogi, they have the same goal. But they are differently qualified. Okay. So therefore, when Krishna said, Jnana is superior to Karma, he said, yes, in terms of it, higher rung on the same ladder. But so Arjuna asks, if you think Jnana is better than Karma, then why are you asking me to do Karma? Why not Jnana? So Arjuna answers, Krishna answers this by telling, yes, definitely Jnana is higher than Karma, but you don't have qualification for Jnana. Your heart is still impure with material anarthas. So at this stage, you have to practice Nishkama Karma Yoga only, O Arjuna. You are not yet qualified for Jnana. Okay. So that is what here Krishna is talking about. Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakradhakur continues. They are known in this world for cultivation of knowledge. This is shown in verses such as the following. So this is person qualified for jnana. Person qualified for jnana. Okay. So in the 2.61, this is the Stita Pragya section. So this is Stita Pragya means one who is qualified for the path of jnana, who is ready to meet on Brahman. He says, Tani Sarvani Sanyamya Yukta Asita Matpara Vashehi Yasyendriyani Tasya Pragya Pratishtita. The yogi who is devoted to me, after restraining all the senses, will remain seated unresponsive to sense objects. He whose senses have thus been brought under control is a Stita Pragya. So, a Stita Pragya, or one who is qualified for Jnana, is one whose heart is, one whose senses are completely under his control. Senses are absolutely not responding to any sense objects. So, for those who are not able to ascend to the platform of knowledge because of impurities of heart, there is a means to ascend to that platform. They become fixed in Nishkama Karma Yoga, activities without desire offered to me. So that's what we were discussing here. Okay. So what about those who want liberation, but whose heart is still filled with some impure material anarthas? They cannot directly practice jnana. So what they should do? They practice Nishkama Karma Yoga. Right. So they are known as those engaged in karma versus such as the following illustrate this yoga. So we are going to see what is this Nishkama Karma Yoga. So here Krishna further continues this discussion. He says, Na karmanam anarambha naishkarmyam purushoshnute na cha sanyasana deva siddhim samadhi gacchati. So, we have to see here in this whole thing, Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga, this stage is actually called as sannyas. Okay. So, Nishkama Karma Yoga is practiced generally by grihasthas. Okay. So, when by practicing Nishkama Karma Yoga, while one is a householder, when the heart becomes purified, then they become qualified for jnana, at which time they can choose to take up sannyas. Okay. So here Krishna says, Na karmanam anarambhan naishkarmyam purushoshnate. Karmanam anarambhan. Without properly performing performance of prescribed karmas. So performance of prescribed karmas is what is Nishkama Karma Yoga at the stage of Grihastha Ashram. Okay. So, without performance of prescribed karmas, Purushaha Naishkarmyam Na Ashnute. A person cannot have purity. Arjuna, you want to give up everything and take up to sannyas. That is not possible. Because you do not get purified by sannyas. Actually, to take up to sannyas, purity is a prerequisite. Purity is not attained by sannyas, but purity is a prerequisite for sannyas. And that prerequisite of purity can be attained only by practice of Nishkama Karma Yoga. Because your heart is not yet purified, O Arjuna, because of practice of Nishkama Karma Yoga, you cannot directly take up to sannyas. And then he says, sannyasana deva nacha siddhim samadigacchati. Just by renunciation of activities, an impure person cannot attain perfection. So, if you say that, okay, little bit purity is still there, I will take up to sannyas and attain perfection. He says, no. If you take up to sannyas without sufficiently purifying your, you cannot attain perfection of sannyas. Right? So, here he says, this verse explains that without purity of heart, jnana does not arise. By not engaging in activities recommended in the scriptures, one cannot attain jnana. One with an impure heart cannot attain jnana by renunciation of activities recommended in the scriptures. Okay. So there is a way. You cannot skip a rung of this ladder. So what Nishkama Karma Yoga can do, Jnana Yoga cannot do actually. Sannyas cannot purify the heart. Sannyas cannot purify the heart. Only Varnashram prescribed duties can purify the heart of a person who has mixed faith. Okay. So this is the path of those people who do not have faith in pure devotional service. So for those who do not have faith in pure devotional service, this is the path that they take. Sakama Karma Yoga, Nishkama Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Ashtanga Yoga and liberation. So Krishna is as of now talking about only them. He is not talking about devotees. Okay. Third chapter is not about devotional service. It is about Karma Yoga. Right. So this is what he is telling. Without Arjuna understand, by sannyas, you cannot attain purification of heart. By sannyas, you can only meditate on Brahman. And in order to meditate on Brahman, your heart must be pure. And that purification of heart comes by practicing your Varnashram duties in a detached way, which is what is Nishkama Karma Yoga. So you should understand your adhikar. You should understand your qualification and act accordingly. Right? That's what he says here. Then he says, but Arjuna says, look, I know myself. I can very well control my senses. I can control my senses. Whenever sensual urge comes, I can... Arjuna here says that, what is the problem? I will take sannyas and I can go to the forest and not do anything. Don't worry about it. Allow me to take sannyas. I can go to the forest and I will stay without doing anything. So Krishna says, Naschit shanamapi jatu tishtat yakarma krit karyatehi avashak karma sarva prakriti jair gunaihi. He says, O Arjuna, you think you can keep quiet without performing anything? Nahi kaschit jatu tishtati akarma krit shanamapi. No one can remain without doing any activity even for a moment. So this no one refers to conditioned souls. Okay. With impure hearts. Okay. It's not that no one can remain without any activity even for a moment. This very, here Krishna very specifically speaks about conditioned souls with impure hearts cannot remain without doing any activity even for a moment. Why? He gives the reason. Sarvaha avashaha karma karyate. Sarvaha, all people, all the conditioned souls, avashaha, helplessly, karma karyate, will perform activities. Why? Will be forced to perform activities by prakriti jair gunaihi, by the modes of material nature, in the form of vasanas, in the form of material impressions, will force the living entities, will force the conditioned souls to engage in activities according to according to their nature. The sattvaguni, the mode of goodness impression will force the living entity to act according to mode of goodness, engage in mode of goodness activities. Mode of passion will force him to act, engage in mode of passion activities, and mode of ignorance impressions will push that person to engage in activities in mode of ignorance, right? So therefore he says that you think you can go to the forest and keep quiet. Use in your heart, the sattvaguni impressions, rajoguni impressions and tamoguni impressions are still there. They will anyway push you to engage in those activities. How are you going to give it up? So he says, rather the person of impure heart who gives up scriptural activities becomes engrossed in material action. Arjuna, here, if you fight on the battlefield, if you pick up your Gandiva and fight on the dharmic battlefield, your heart will get purified. If you go to the forest, because you are a Kshatriya and you have a lot of mode of passion impression still in your heart, you go and beg, even though it is not your dharma to beg, you go and beg someone. If someone refuses to give you alms, you may become angry and you may start fighting with that person. That is not according to your dharma. You know, that is not a prescribed duty for you. So you will get sinful reactions for that. You will not be able to avoid it. You may suppress it for a while, but for how long you will suppress? Nigraha kim karishyati? For how long you can suppress? After some time, your real nature will come out. But because you are acting in that way while you are in sannyas ashram, it is not appropriate for your ashram. You will get additional sinful reactions for that. So that's what he says, that rather the person of impure heart who gives up scriptural activities become engrossed in material actions. That is explained in this verse. But Arjuna may say, but sannyas, renunciation of activities, means negation of all tendencies for both Vedic and material activities. Does it not? So he says, yeah, but in sannyas, doesn't sannyas negate one's tendencies for Vedic activities and material activities? So Krishna says, no. Sannyas does not negate those tendencies. Beyond one's will, one will engage in action anyway. With an impure heart, you take up sannyas, you take up the path of Jnana Yoga, you will succumb very quickly. Then Krishna says, Parmendriyani sanyamya ya aste manasasmaran indriyartan vimuda mityachara sochate. Arjuna says, look, I know myself. I know my capabilities. I have very strong sense control. I can control any urge. You don't worry about me. I will not pick up my Gandiva while I am in the forest. I will not fight with anyone. I have that much sense control. I know that. I can control any urge. I am qualified for sannyas. I like to go to the forest and live as a sannyasi. Krishna says, oh really? Is that your understanding of sannyas? He says, a sannyasi is not one who is capable of controlling his urges, material urges. A sannyasi is one who doesn't get any material urge. A sannyasi is not one who is capable of controlling his senses. But a sannyasi is one who never gets the urge of, who never gets any sensual urge at all. That is the qualification for sannyas. So he says, Karmendriyani sanyamya ya aste manasasmaran. Indriyartan. He who controlling the actions of senses remains remembering those objects of the senses in his mind. Vimudatma. He is bewildered. Saha mitya sauchyate. So he is called a mityachara, pretender. Pretender does not mean that he wants to cheat others, but he is cheating himself, thinking that he is a qualified sannyasi. And by practicing that kind of sannyasi, he is actually progressing towards liberation. Actually, he is not progressing towards liberation. He is getting degraded. So he says, Arjuna, you think if you are sense controlled, you are qualified for sannyas? No. You should not get any sense gratificatory desire only. Then you are qualified for sannyas. Do you fall within that category? That is what Krishna says. So basically here he is establishing what is the qualification for jnana or adhikar. Because here Arjuna's question was, you want me to do karma or jnana? Krishna says, depending on your adhikar. So Arjuna says, what do you mean adhikar? Qualification. He says, oh, first he says, no sense gratification. Arjuna says, fine. No sense gratification, I can. He says, no. Not engagement in sense gratification. No sense gratificatory desire also. So this is like something very, very high, very, you know, high qualification. So Arjuna may say, look, I can guarantee that I will not engage in sense gratification. But if you say, I should not get a sense gratificatory desire also, that is very difficult. So then Krishna says, yastu indriyani manasa niyamyarabhate Arjuna karmendriyaihi karma yogam asaktaha savishishyate. Therefore, I am telling you, Arjuna, yastu, that person who still has not overcome the material desires within his heart still has some material desires, what he can do, Arjuna, you fall within this category. Asaktaha, without any attachment to enjoying the fruits. Indriyani manasa niyamya, controlling the senses by the mind. Karmendriyaihi karma yogam arabate, engage your senses in the activities of karma yoga. But with asaktaha, without having attachment to enjoying the material fruits of that action. If you engage in karma yoga, saha vishishyate, that is better. Okay. So better than being, it is better to be a qualified grihastha than an unqualified sannyasi. We are talking on the path of, karma, jnana and liberation. So he says better to be a qualified grihastha engaging in nishkama karma yoga than to be an unqualified sannyasi engaging in jnana yoga. Because if you engage in nishkama karma yoga, your heart will become purified and then you will become qualified for jnana. But if you take up to sannyas without purification of heart, sannyas cannot purify your heart, and without a purified heart, you will not be able to meditate on Brahman also. So then, therefore, so if you don't have a purified heart, you are not qualified for sannyas. You are qualified for nishkama karma yoga. And because you are not engaged in nishkama karma yoga, you will get sinful reaction for that. So therefore, understand that these are not choice. To engage in any of these spiritual activities, it's not a question of choice, it's a question of adhikar. So Narada Muni saw a higher adhikar in the Hariyashvas and the Shavalashvas. So according to their adhikar, he engaged them. Whereas Daksha did not have the capacity to see a higher adhikar in them. You know, like you may have a big piece of gold which you may choose to use as a paperweight. So a person who does not understand the value of gold may use that piece of gold as a paper weight. Okay. Whereas the person who knows that that the value of that gold may take that gold and make money out of it, very well understanding that the role of that the duty that that gold piece was doing can as well be done by a piece of stone, right? So that's exactly what Narada Muni did. So he saw that they had higher qualification. So why they should be wasting their time engaging on the path of karma? Okay. So therefore, Krishna says, Niyatam kuru karmatvam. Niyatam kuru karmatvam karmajyayo hi akarmanaha. Sharira yatra pichate na prasidhya da karmanaha. Perform your daily scriptural duties. Okay, which means essentially nishkama karma yoga. Karma jayo hi akarmanaha. For you, acting is better than not acting. Which means karma yoga is better than jnana yoga. Or in other words, to be a householder, honest householder, is better than being an unqualified sannyasi. Okay. Na prasidhyet sharira yatra api. You cannot even maintain your body if you take up the sannyas. So don't do it. That's what he says. Therefore, you should engage in daily obligatory activities such as sandhya vandana, niyatam, karma, kuru. This is better than renunciation of this action, karma sannyas. By renunciation of all actions, you will not even be able to maintain your body. So engage in an action for which you are qualified. Later, Krishna talks about the qualification for jnana or sannyas. What is the qualification in 2 verses? He says, Yastu atmaratir eva syad, atma triptas cha manava, atman eva cha santushtas tasya karyam na vidyate. He says, Yastu atmaratir eva syad, one who is attracted to atma. So atma means self-realization. One who has become interested in self-realization, atma triptaha, one who is completely satisfied in only in pursuing self-realization, atman eva cha santushta. So this means he is satisfied only by self-realization and not by anything else. Tasya karyam na vidyate. For him, karya here refers to varnashrama duties. Okay. So for tasya karyam na vidyate, for him, he can give up all his practice of varnashram duties and take up to complete sannyas. But and then he says that naivatasya kritenartho nakriteneha kaschana nachasya sarva bhuteshu kaschit artha vipashraya. He says that such a person does not gain anything by performance of varnashram duties. So a sakama karma yogi gains, loses. Okay, let's see. Let's do this exercise. Okay. So a sakama karma yogi, by performance of varnashram, he gains piety. And by neglecting to perform varnashram duty, he gains sinful reaction. Okay. A nishkama karma yogi, by performance of varnashram duties, he gains purity of heart. And by neglecting, he gains sins. Okay. Whereas a jnana yogi, by performance of nishkama karma yoga or varnashram duties, he does not gain anything. And by neglecting to perform his varnashram duties, he does not lose anything. That's what he says. That's what Krishna is telling here. Naivatasya kritenartho nakriteneha kaschana nachasya sarva bhuteshu kaschid artha vipashraya. So you have to perform your varnashram duties either you should be gaining something by performing it, either you should gain piety or purification of heart. And by neglecting to perform, you should be getting sins. So that gives you the impetus to not neglect it. But a Jnana Yogi does not lose anything also. And these Karma Yogis, they are obligated to Deva, Rishi, Bhuta, Apta, all these various personalities. Okay. Whereas a Jnana Yogi is beyond that. He has no material needs in one sense. So therefore, he is not dependent on all these forefathers, devatas, and everyone. So therefore, those karma, obligatory karmas for those personalities also he need not perform. So therefore, so here Krishna is telling Arjuna, this is the qualification. Can you tell for sure that you are interested only in pursuing self-realization? You are satisfied only with activities of self-realization and nothing else except activities for self-realization pleases you. Do you fall within this category? Arjuna says, no. Therefore, Krishna says, tasmat. Therefore, O Arjuna, asaktaha satatam karyam karma samachara. Asakto hi acharan karma param apnoti purushaha. Tasmat. Therefore, my dear Arjuna, satatam, always, asaktaha karyam karma samachara. Engage in performing detached duties, which means engage in nishkama karma yoga. Asakto hi acharan karma paramapnoti purushaha. A person like you, purushaha here refers to a person with karma adhikar, like Arjuna. Okay. Arjuna at this stage of Bhagavad Gita has karma adhikar. Later his adhikar will increase. Right. So asakto hi acharan karma paramapnoti purushaha. You can attain your, I know you are pursuing liberation, but at your stage, in order to attain liberation, the means for you to attain liberation is by performing karma. Because you no longer have the adhikar, you do not yet have the adhikar to give up your prescribed duties. Right? That's what he says. Tasmad, therefore, since you do not have qualification for rising to the platform of jnana yet, you do not yet have, and performing actions with desire is not suitable for you since you have spiritual intelligence, you should perform action without desire. Okay, that's what he's telling. So therefore, it's a question of adhikar. You do not have the lower adhikar of sakama karma yoga also. You do not have the higher adhikar of jnana yoga also. You do have the adhikar of nishkama karma yoga. Tasmad asaktah satatam karyam karma samachara. Therefore, perform detached duty. That is explained in this verse. Therefore, you should perform obligatory prescribed actions without attachment. By doing this, you will attain liberation. Okay. So, this is about acting according to qualification. Now, next Krishna in the very same third chapter also discusses about preaching according to qualification. Which is exactly what Narada Muni is doing here to the Hariyashvas and Shavalashvas. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Na buddhi bedam janayet ajnanam karma sanginam joshayet sarva karmani vidvan yuktaha samacharan. So he says, this verse actually talks about how should a devotee, sorry, not devotee, how should a person qualified for jnana deal with a person qualified for karma. Okay, how should a person qualified for jnana, he himself is qualified for jnana, he himself is qualified for sannyas, how should he deal with a person who is qualified for karma? Okay, so he says, just give me one second. Just give me one second. I just have to send a reminder. Okay, so he says that Vidwan, the wise man, here Vidwan means a Jnana Yogi, na buddhi bedam janayet, he should not disturb the intelligence of ajnanam karma sanginam, of the ignorant people who are attached to the results of their work. Okay, so he is a sakama karma yogi. Okay, so he should not disturb their intelligence. Disturb their intelligence means what? He should not go to them. The jnana yogi should not go to the sakama karma yogi and he should tell, you know what, karma is inferior to jnana, jnana is much more superior. Why you are engaging in inferior act of karma, engaging jnana? You should not tell like that. You should not tell like that. That's what he is indicating here. So rather what he should do, samacharan yuktah, engaging in all work himself with detachment, sarva karmani joshayet, he should engage them in activity. So rather teach them detached work than detachment from work. Okay, so you should teach them detached work. Okay, the detachment should be from the fruits. Okay, rather than detachment from work. Okay, so which is sannyas. So he may be qualified, the jnana yogi is qualified, but seeing that the person who is engaging in the sakama karma yoga does not yet have the qualification to give up karma because his heart is still impure, therefore he should rather teach them detached work rather than recommending detachment from work. So here a very important purport, Srila, very important purport Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur writes here. Let us focus on this purport little bit. So here Krishna is telling Arjuna, this is the instruction to a jnana yogi. You should not disturb the minds of those attached to action because of their impure hearts by saying, this karma is despicable. Give up action and become successful like me by the practice of jnana. So one should not tell like that. Instead, you should engage them in action by saying, perform action without desire and become successful. So basically that's what. Teach them detached work and not detachment from work. Doing those actions, you set an example for others. Okay. But someone may say, oh, but this is so here he says, but according to Bhagavatam, this is contrary to the statement of the Lord. In Bhagavatam, the Lord speaks to the demigods. The demigods were troubled by this Vritrasura. They approached the Lord and requested for help. So the Lord told, they offered prayers. The Lord was happy. But the Lord also understood that they had approached him and requesting him for a material benefit. So the Lord responds by telling, Swayam Nishreyasam Vidvan Navakti Agnaya Karmahi narati rogino apatyam vanchatopi bishaktamaha. So he says, swayam nishreyasam vidvan, one who knows the highest good, na vakti ajnaya, he will never instruct a foolish person, karmahi, to engage in material enjoyment. Okay. Bishaktamaha, just as an experienced physician, na rogino rati, he will not give his patient apatyam, a food which is injurious to his health. Vanchatopi, even though the patient may desire to eat that unhealthy food, an expert doctor would never give that to his patient. Okay. So, so therefore, Bhagavatam says that that a person who understands the higher path will never recommend a lower path for a person. So lower path is karma. So here, so why does Bhagavatam seem to contradict Bhagavad Gita here? So the explanation that is given is true, but this is in relation to instructions given about bhakti. A bhakti yogi can tell a karma yogi to give up karma, whereas a jnana yogi cannot ask a karma yogi to give up karma and take up jnana. Even though the karma yogi may have interest in jnana, may have faith on the path of jnana, but he does not have necessary purification of heart to take up the path of jnana. Whereas if a bhakti yogi is able to generate faith in the path of bhakti yoga in the karma yogi's heart, then he can recommend him to give up karma. Because apart from faith, there is no other qualification that is needed to practice bhakti. Right? So therefore he says, it is not contradictory to giving instructions in this way about jnana. Jnana is dependent on purity of the heart. Right? Jnana is dependent on purity of the heart, and purity of the heart is dependent on action without desire, which is Nishkama Karma Yoga. But bhakti is by nature very strong and is not dependent even on the purity of the heart. So if one has an impure heart, then he should practice. By practicing bhakti, the heart becomes purified. Whereas if a person who has taken up to jnana, if his heart is impure, jnana cannot purify, jnana yoga, the path of jnana yoga cannot purify heart. Path of nishkama karma yoga only purifies the heart. So therefore, a jnana yogi should not ask a karma yogi to give up what he is qualified for and take up to jnana, because he will not have a qualification for jnana, which is lack of purity. Whereas a bhakti yogi can tell it to a person qualified for karma, give up your karma and practice bhakti, provided he can give him faith on the path of bhakti. Right? So therefore here, this is the most important line that Srila Vishnachara Thakur is mentioning. If it is possible for you to produce faith in bhakti in another person, in the other person, then you may disturb the minds of those attached to action. For those who have faith in bhakti have no obligation for performing karma. You see here, those who have faith in bhakti, okay, have no obligation to perform karma. But the same is not true for the path of jnana. If one who is qualified for karma, if you generate faith in jnana, he is not qualified for jnana. Because only faith is not sufficient to practice the path of jnana. You need purity of heart. And that purity of heart comes only by proper practice of Nishkama Karma Yoga. So therefore, he says, you rather train him to perform detached action. And then by detached action, his heart will become purified. Then he will come to the path of jnana. But if a bhakti yogi meets a sakama karma yogi and somehow give orchestrates ways and means by which he can accumulate lot of Ajnata Sukriti, and by that accumulation of Ajnata Sukriti, if he develops faith in bhakti, then he can tell him, now give up this karma and just practice bhakti. That is possible, right? That's what he says. If it is possible for you to produce faith, he does not say deep faith, strong faith, okay? He does not say faith in bhakti in the other person, then you may disturb the minds of those attached to action. For those who have faith in bhakti have no obligation for performing karma. This should be understood from such statements as the following. Okay. Tavat karmani kurvita na nirvidyeta yavata mat katha shravanadavva shraddha yavan na jayate. So he says, tavat, till then, karmani kurvita, one should perform varnashram activities. Okay, so one should perform varnashram activities till then. Till when? Na nirvidyeta yavata. Till one has developed detachment. Detachment from material activities. Okay, this is the qualification for Jnana Yoga. One, or Mat Katha Shravanadavva Shraddha, or he should have developed faith in the activities of devotional service. This is the qualification for Bhakti Yoga. So either one should develop qualification for Jnana Yoga, which is complete detachment, which is born out of purification of heart due to practice of Nishkama Karma Yoga, or one should develop faith in the path of bhakti, in the limbs of devotional service, by the association of devotees. If you see either this qualification or this qualification, then he need not engage in karma, varnashram duties. But shraddha yavan na jayate, if neither nirvid jayate nor shraddha jayate, then tavat karmani kurvita, then he should continue performing his varnashram duties like that. So here he is talking about three qualification, nirvid being the qualification for Jnana Yoga, matkata shravanadavva shraddha being the qualification of bhakti yoga. In the absence of both, one has the qualification for karma. And then he says here, dharman santyajya yas sarvan mam bhajet sattu sattama. So here he clearly says that if one has mam bhajet, faith in worshipping Krishna, then dharman santyajya yas sarvan, he can give up dharma. So dharma here refers to varnashrama dharma. Satu sattama, he is considered to be very advanced, like that Krishna says to Uddhava in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Again Krishna tells Arjuna in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, sarva dharman parityajya mamekam sharanam braja, like that tyaktva sadharmam charanam bhujam harer. So many other such verses are there where clearly it is mentioned that if one has faith in bhakti, then one is not obligated to practice the varnashram duties, right? That obligation is not there. So therefore he says, tyaktva swadharmam, if a person having given up his duties in varnashrama, harehe charanambujam bhajan, and begins, he says, you see, just begins the worship of the Lord's lotus, worship of the Lord's lotus feet, apakvo va ata patet tato yadi, and happens to deviate or not reach perfection. He has not yet reached perfection. He has just started, but he has already given up tyaktva swadharmam. He says, amushya kim kva abhadram abhut, there is actually no misfortune for him at all in the future, like that. So in this way Bhagavatam talks about qualification for jnana, karma and yoga. So in the 11th canto Krishna says, nirvinnanam jnana yogo nyasinam iha karmasu teshu anirvinna chittanam karma yogastu kaminam. So he says, Nirvinnanam Jnana Yoga. Jnana Yoga is recommended for those who are unattached to material life. So if one is totally unattached to material life, he is qualified for Jnana. Nyasinam Iha Karmasu. And thus they reject material activities. Okay. Karma Yogastu, but Karma Yoga is recommended. Teshu Anirvinna Chittanam. So who is qualified for karma? Those who have a lot of material desires, they are qualified for karma. And to fulfill those material desires, they should perform their varnashram duties. Like that. Okay. In qualification for bhakti, he says, Yadrichaya matkatado jata shraddhastu yapoman, nanirvinno nati sakto bhakti yogosya siddhida. So he says that Yadrichaya, so Yadrichaya, the acharyas explain, Yadrichaya means somehow or by the mercy of devotees, which manifests in the form of Agyata Sukriti. Okay. If one develops Mat Katadau Shraddha, if one develops faith in the activities of devotional service, and what is the nature of that faith which develops due to the association of devotees? The nature of that faith is that na nirvinno, there is no extreme sense of detachment, which is the qualification for Jnana Yoga, na atyato. And there is no extreme sense of attachment, which is the qualification for Karma Yoga. So one is willing, because a Jnana Yogi is not even interested to engage his senses in any activity. He has such extreme sense of detachment. And a Karma Yogi wants to engage everything for his own pleasure. And he does not want to engage anything for anyone's pleasure. So here, a person for bhakti, he is not so afraid of this material world that he is unwilling to engage anything in Krishna's service. He's not so attached that whatever he wants to, whatever his senses come in touch, he wants to engage for his own gratification. So in this, he has a balanced, sort of this thing. So bhakti yoga, such a person can attain perfection in bhakti yoga, like that. So I don't want to go over the purport. You know, there are so many things which we could discuss. So therefore, we should be careful. We also see examples in Bhagavatam about how guidance was given according to, we see the example of Narada Muni to Dhruva Maharaj. He did not, even though initially tried to dissuade him from pursuing material benefits, when he understood very clearly that he was very much attached to enjoying a kingdom greater than God, greater than his grandfather and father, then he says, okay, go and perform Tivrena Bhakti Yogene Ajeta Purusham Param Akama Sarva Kamova Moksha Kamo Udaradi. Go and perform a worship of the Lord, and by that you will attain your material desires fulfilled. Vidura also, seeing that Dhritarashtra was not qualified for bhakti, he engaged him in the path of Ashtanga Yoga for liberation. And again, you see Krishna at these stages, he recommending Arjuna various things according to that adhikar of Arjuna at that particular level of I will not elaborate on that. Maybe we could cover some of these things during the question session. So anyways, talking about, preaching according to one's qualification. So the ninth offense is to instruct a faithless person about the glory of the holy name. So while we can always tell a person attached to karma to give up his karma, take up the bhakti, provided we give them faith. But if we don't detect that faith in that person, then to keep telling him more and more about bhakti will make him only more inimical. So I will read some small portions from Harinam Chintamani about this ninth offense. Srila Bhaktivinod Thakur speaks about this. I will just read some small sections, because we don't have time for reading the whole chapter. So he says that to take up the name, one must have qualification. That qualification is faith and faith alone. Okay, there is no other disqualification. Okay, so he says, but if one does not have faith, a real Vaishnava will not give him instruction on the name or bhakti also. Okay, so if you don't see that faith, okay, so that is the behavior of a Vaishnava. For if the faithless man takes the name, he will simply offend it. For instance, if one casts pearls to the swine, they will simply grind them to dust. Or if you give a fine cloth to a monkey, he will just tear it to pieces. Okay. So if the faithless take the name, they will kill themselves from their offenses. And simultaneously, he who gives the name to the faithless will lose all his devotional credits very quickly. Okay. And then he gives some examples for that. We will not go into this. So, then later, he says, but as long as one does not have faith, one has no qualification. One should give up desire for position in the material world and become humble, listening to the glories of the names from the scriptures and the Vaishnavas. Anyways, later he says that even a guru who has done this mistake of giving the holy name or bhakti to should try to rectify it. And if there is no scope for rectification, he should give up that disciple like that, he says. And later, finally, he gives a very interesting point Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur makes. O Lord Chaitanya, being so merciful, you first gave faith to Jagai and Maya, and then you gave them the name. So when we say patra apatra nadeki nadeki sthanastan, it means patra apatra means in terms of material qualification and disqualification. But one should definitely see whether faith is there or not. That is why here very important point, Srila, this is actually Haridas Thakur speaking to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He says, you first gave faith to Jagai and Madaya and then you gave them the name. So wonderful was your personality that you created faith in all men. The Vaishnavas should try to follow in your footsteps, which means we should try to give them faith in bhakti rather than making them forcefully engage in the acts of devotional service. We should rather act in a way that would make them appreciate something connected to devotional service. Like that. Anyways, sorry, I was sort of distracted, you know. I did not make a very coherent presentation today, but hopefully something was clear. So we will try to cover some things during the question and answer session. We still have some time. So you can please raise your hands. I will unmute you and you can please ask the questions. Ramangi, Radhika Mataji, you can please go ahead.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, Dhanvat Pranam. Thank you, Prabhuji, for the wonderful class. Prabhuji, I have few questions. You mentioned about the yoga ladder, and you also mentioned there are all rungs on the yoga ladder. So one should go through these ladders in order to get liberation. But while going through...
Let me clarify... Okay, go ahead, Nataji. Go ahead. Finish your question.
So, is that possible to achieve liberation taking up one yoga, like Nishkama Karma Yoga, if the person gets a purified heart?
Your voice is breaking. I'm not able to clearly hear you. Oh, I didn't hear the last line. What did you say? Is it possible to achieve liberation?
Liberation in each yoga individually?
No, as I mentioned, if you remember, I mentioned the terms of this. Not individually, you will have to, actually I had mentioned, I will just show, go to that slide. Where is that? Okay, I think, yeah, here. So each one has a particular role. By Nishkama Karma Yoga, you purify your heart. Then you have to engage in the activities of Jnana Yoga for further getting self-realization. And then one should perform the limbs of Ashtanga Yoga for Paramatma realization. And then one achieves liberation. So even though all of them have goal for liberation, Nishkama Karma Yoga purifies, which is a prerequisite for self-realization. Then self-realization is accomplished by Jnana Yoga, which is a prerequisite for meditating on the super soul and achieving self super soul realization, which is accomplished by Ashtanga Yoga. Then one achieves liberation. So it is all one. You practice all of them like that.
Prabhuji, but just now we have discussed now from third chapter that Krishna says one can choose to continue on Nishkama Karma Yoga even though you have purified your heart, to set an example. So you mean to say that person is...
Yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. So he did say that you can continue Nishkama Karma Yoga, which means that is Nishkama Karma Yoga externally. So, but while practicing it, he should also have some elements of jnana, which he should practice. So not that if he is engaged only in Nishkama Karma, which is detached work, and he is not doing any activity for, of meditation on Brahman, then such a person will not achieve liberation. So this Nishkama Karma Yogi, for setting the right example for others, he may engage in Nishkama Karma Yoga, but otherwise for his own progress, he should engage in the limbs of Jnana Yoga and Ashtanga Yoga to actually attain liberation. That is needed actually. Is that relevant, Mataji?
Prabhuji, yes, Prabhuji. But Jnana Yoga also, this is about Nishkam Karma Yoga, you mentioned. But we see that this is a Jnana Bhakta or something like that you mentioned, and then they achieve liberation. So we understand that he is not undertaking or undergoing Ashtanga Yoga. He is continuing with Jnana Yoga and he achieves Brahma Jyoti. We see Jnana Bhaktis or Jnana.
We don't see anyone. Have you seen Jnana Yogis practicing Jnana Yoga?
Okay. But in the classes, we get to hear that Jnani achieves liberation. He achieves Brahma Jyoti.
Oh, yeah. So there, what it means is, okay, I didn't want to go into the details, but because you have asked this question, I will just touch upon this point. So there are two ways in which it is Jnana. You can have Jnana Yoga as a path. You can have Jnana Yoga as limbs. Okay. So the yoga ladder that I explained is actually as described by Srila Baldev Dyabhushan. Now I will explain the same thing as explained by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in a slightly different way. I will just add one more slide to it because I didn't want to go into the details and necessarily confuse people, but because you asked the question, I will answer this question. Okay. So here, according to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, so this is how it looks like. One practices Sakama Karma Yoga for living a pious life. Okay. And then they come to the stage of Nishkama Karma Yoga for purification of heart. And then, when heart is purified, then they have three means of attaining liberation. Okay. Either they can continue performing their Varnashram duties, okay, or you can say externally it looks like Nishkama Karma Yoga. But because purification of heart has been accomplished, therefore they have the element of jnana within their heart, or they can practice jnana yoga, or they can practice ashtanga yoga, and then all three of them achieve liberation. Okay, so this is Shri Vishnu Chakradhakur's explanation. But even here, actually, this jnana yoga, what is called as jnana yoga here, will have some elements of bhakti, will have some elements of jnana, which will be the predominant, and then some small elements of ashtanga yoga also. If you read Srila Kapila Dev's teachings in the third canto, 27th chapter and 28th chapter, in the 27th chapter especially, he talks about practice of jnana yoga, and he very clearly indicates that it has some elements of bhakti and some elements of yoga also, along with the predominant limbs of jnana. There are some elements of yoga also that they practice. Okay. And in the practice of Ashtanga Yoga also, you will have some elements of bhakti, some elements of jnana, and some elements of yoga. Even though the elements of yoga will be, or the limbs of yoga will be predominant, but they will have some limbs of jnana also, some limbs of bhakti also. So, you can take Ashtanga Yoga as a path, or Ashtanga Yoga as a limb. Okay. So here, so in one sense, actually, if you see, and even this Nishkama Karma Yogi, he can continue practicing his prescribed duties for setting the right example for others. But apart from that, he should have the element of bhakti, and he should have the element of jnana, and he should have the element of yoga. Okay. So even though, one of them may be more predominant, but at least some bare minimum limbs which are needed for accomplishing self-realization and paramatma realization, one needs the limbs of jnana and yoga also. So this clarification comes from Kapila Dev's teachings. If you read third canto, 27th chapter, he speaks about practice of jnana yoga, and third canto, 28th chapter, he speaks about practice of ashtanga yoga. In that, these details are there.
Very clear, Prabhuji. Thank you, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, another question is, you mentioned about Nishkama Karma Yogi. When we draw a parallel, we see them as sadhakas in bhakti.
Yeah.
So, is it about, because sadhakas are still attached to materialistic activities, or you mentioned in another place, like, they have mixed faith. Nishkama Karma Yogis have mixed faith.
I am talking about, I am talking about the path of, this is the path of mixed faith, and this is the path of your, so a person who traverses this path from the beginning to end has mixed faith only. And a person who traverses this path from beginning to end has pure faith only. Okay. We are not making this difference. Okay. Let's not mix these two things. Okay. So when one starts the path of pure faith, he is a sadhaka. Okay. A sadhaka has, his goal is prema. Okay. His goal is to become an associate of Krishna. Okay. But he has some anarthas, obstacles in the form of material desire. Okay. So then he reaches the stage of bhava. And then he reaches the stage of prema. Okay. So a person who has reached the stage of bhava, his goal is also prema, or to become an associate. But he has no anarthas. Okay. But he has to practice little bit more for that love to fully blossom, so that he can reach the stage of prema. So similarly, and all these personalities, whether he is a sadhaka or a bhava bhakta or a prema bhakta, all of them have pure faith. Okay. There is no question of mixed faith here. So here, on the path of mixed faith, you have a Nishkama Karma Yogi, Okay. So his goal is liberation. Okay. But he has some anarthas. Okay. And then you get a person who reaches the stage of jnana. Okay. Where his goal is also liberation. But he still has to, he has no anarthas. Okay. But he still has to perform his practice of jnana so that he becomes completely qualified for liberation and achieves the path of liberation. Okay. So these are two. I'm just drawing some parallels. So he has the goal of liberation. He has the goal of prema. But he has anarthas. He also has anarthas. So here, at the stage of bhava, his goal is also to achieve prema. But he has no anarthas. And similarly, at the stage of jnana, his goal is also liberation. But he has no anarthas. And at stage of prema, he attains perfection. At the stage of liberation, he performs a perfection. So I was just drawing this parallel. I am not telling that a sadhaka is the same as nishkama karmayogi, because a nishkama karmayogi has mixed faith and the sadhaka has pure faith. Is that relevant, Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji. So my question is, if that is the case, then a bhakta has no obligation to perform varnashrama duties, even a sadhaka?
Yeah.
Correct, no?
Yeah.
Then why we are having this debate among devotees, why about this pinda pradhana? Some say you shouldn't do, and some say you should do. So any clarification from BG Prabhuji? 18th chapter also Krishna says about Yagi and Sannyasi. There also some confusion, Prabhuji. Can you please clarify?
Yeah, in my understanding, based on what I have heard and read, there are certain things which a devotee is expected to do for nourishing his own faith, for nourishing his own devotional faith. And there are certain things which a devotee is supposed to do for setting the example for the rest of the world who may not have faith in pure devotional service. Okay. So, I would say the first category is activities for nourishment. Okay. And the second category of activities is, activities for loka sangraha. Set the right example for others. Okay. So there are two categories of activities. For devotees, they should not be performing any activities of varnashrama or thinking that I need it for my personal nourishment. Then it becomes mixed devotional service. But understanding that I don't need this for my personal nourishment, but if I don't do this, a common people may, for my example, and they may also, our family members may say, oh, you ISKCON devotees, you have no gratitude. You got so much from your parents. You are not even showing your gratitude by offering some pindadan to them. You know, like that they may see. And you cannot tell them the pure devotional conclusions, because it will become the ninth offense also. Because you see that they don't have faith. So for such purposes, one can do the needful without necessarily giving for my own personal nourishment, I need it. That is the understanding. That is my understanding.
Yes, Prabhuji. Wonderful, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, one last thing. You have mentioned about this Jiva fall down theory and about faith in the last class, but we are so disappointed that you didn't give the second session. Prabhuji, half knowledge is also very harmful for us. So show us a way how we can clarify the rest of the things or how we can go about it. Prabhuji, please.
I will see, Mataji. If there is an opportunity, I will do something.
Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you. At least about Prabhupada mentioning about dormant love and Mahaprabhu's Jivera Swarupa. on this, at least, I don't know if I can.
I can. I have my understanding on that. I can present. Yeah, when I feel that the forum is right, I will definitely do it.
Yes, Babaji. Thank you, Babaji, for the wonderful class. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Mother Gail.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Actually, I was going to, I had a comment and some questions also, but my comment was actually going to be on this point, you know, about not discussing this controversial inherent bhakti topic, you know, because, you know, this, any august group, I believe, means they want to hear truth, especially truth that's black and white, you know, so mm-hmm. not discussing such truths, I think that only deprives people who are sincere in wanting to know the truth from that knowledge, you know, and if people are disturbed by hearing such truth, then it is their responsibility to ask themselves why they are disturbed. We're not talking about, I'm not talking about controversial things. I'm talking about the black and white things. So I really wanted to make that issue because it was, I too was very, very disappointed and it was very distracting for me during this class that we didn't discuss it, you know? So I just want, that was my comment, you know?
Okay. I apologize for that.
Okay. I have several questions actually about the Ashtanga path, the Jnana path. Okay, some basic things. When we say that the path of Jnana and the path of Ashtanga Yoga, their aim is liberation. So when mm-hmm. I think of the aim of Jnana yogis, mm-hmm. I think that my understanding is that their aim is impersonal Brahma Jyoti, you know, like type wanting to merge. Whereas the aim of Ashtanga yogis is to realize Paramatma.
Well, or super soul. I too had a similar understanding, but after you know reading more and trying to understand a little more, it's not like that much. It is actually self-realization and realizing the super soul is a prerequisite for liberation. So even a Jnana Yogi, if you read the third canto, 27th chapter, Kapiladev's teachings, he very clearly indicates that even a Jnana Yogi's practice involves super soul realization.
So you're saying that before impersonal liberation, a person should have realized super soul in the heart?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. Yes. That's like revolutionary. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, so yeah, again, super soul realization is a prerequisite to impersonal liberation. So
correct.
So therefore, but it seems like maybe this is wrong, especially after you answered Mataji's question just now. See, I also thought that Ashtanga Yoga was somehow a little above Jnana Yoga. But it's not.
In terms of the rung, yeah. If you see it as a limb, if you see it as a limb, it is certainly, it comes higher in the...
Okay, this is where I have confusion too. How to distinguish between the limb and the path.
Well, I mean, you don't have to necessarily. I will remove one of them from your the whole thing. So forget about there are three paths. Okay. So forget that there are three paths, because all three paths involve these three elements of bhakti, jnana and yoga. Okay. So they need bhakti, because without bhakti, any endeavor will not be successful. So they will have the element of bhakti. Mm-hmm. And they will have the element of jnana, they will have the element of yoga. Just that what you call as the path of jnana yoga will just have more predominance of the limb of jnana. And what you call as ashtanga yoga will just have a predominance of the limb of yoga. That's all. And what you call as nishkama karma yoga will, apart from this bhakti, jnana and yoga, they will also be externally practicing the limbs of varnashrama duties, just to set the right example for the common people. That's all. But Srila Baldevidya Bhushan has clubbed all these three into one. Okay. Because all have this element of bhakti, jnana and yoga. Okay. So now what he has done is he has just explained about this limb of yoga, limb of jnana and limb of bhakti. That's all. Right. So at this stage, what does the limb of karma do? It purifies the heart. What does the limb of jnana do? It leads to self-realization. What does the limb of yoga do? It aids paramatma realization. All of these three things are needed in order to attain liberation. That's all.
When you say all these three are needed to attain liberation, here you're defining liberation as what?
Impersonal liberation.
So you need Ashtanga yoga to attain impersonal liberation?
Yeah, the limbs of Ashtanga yoga. Yes, yes.
But then you also need jnana yoga to attain impersonal liberation.
Yeah, you need the limb of jnana yoga also to attain impersonal liberation. You need all. You need the elements of nishkama karma for purification of heart, and then the limbs of jnana for self-realization, and the limbs of ashtanga yoga for super soul realization. All of them put together only eventually will lead to...
Okay, I see where I'm getting stuck here, where you said you need jnana for impersonal liberation, but
you need jnana for self-realization, I said.
Yeah, oh yes, I'm sorry. You said for self-realization.
Yeah.
Right? And then once you get that self-realization, then the Ashtanga yoga process builds on that. Or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it is exactly chronological that way.
That's what my confusion is.
I'm not very sure if it's chronological exactly, that only after full self-realization is accomplished, only then one starts meditating on the Paramatma. I don't know about that. Those kind of details are not there in Bhagavatam as far as I have seen. I'm not very sure if it is exactly chronological. Yeah, definitely Nishkama Karma Yoga is first. That comes first in chronology.
Yeah.
But between Jnana and Ashtanga, those limbs, are they parallel or sequential? I am not so much.
Yeah, this is my question. This is my question. Okay. So, and when we say that we need jnana for self-realization, this self-realization we're talking about is Brahma-Bhuta platform, right? The person simply experientially realizes that they're not the body, that they are a spirit energy, right? When we say, right? Brahma-Bhuta.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay, I think one other question I had.
Brahma-Bhuta means... after achieving perfection of both jnana yoga and ashtanga yoga, both just before the actual liberation, once when he has achieved both self-realization and super soul realization, that is the stage of Brahma Bhuta. That is the Brahma Bhuta stage.
But at Brahma Bhuta stage, you have realized that you're not the body, but you're still in the body.
Yeah. You're still in the body. Yes.
So before that, what is the self-realization? What are you calling self-realization before that Brahma Bhuta stage?
That is Brahma Bhuta stage.
No. The Jnana Yoga, that leads to self-realization, right?
Yeah.
This self-realization, how do you define this self-realization? That, yeah.
I'm not the body, I am the soul.
Yes, and that's not
realizing it.
Is that not?
Yeah, that is. But that has to go along the realizing the super soul also. So I am not very sure whether it is, you know, realizing the super soul and realizing the self, whether they are exactly sequential. I am not very sure about that. You know, my understanding is they parallelly happen.
Okay. Okay, then one last thing I had to ask for clarification is, this in karma yoga, you know, as we go from sakkama to nishkam karma yoga, you know, in sakkama karma yoga, the person has desires to enjoy the fruits of their activities. Okay. Whereas in nishkam karma yoga, the desire to enjoy fruits is no longer there, but they are still attached to the activity itself, right?
Well, because in one sense, they are attached to liberation,
but also the activities, like Arjuna, right? He was attached to fighting, no?
Well, I have heard this. It's not a question of attachment to the activities. It is because I have not seen the acharyas define a Nishkama Karma Yogi's qualification in that way. A Nishkama Karma Yogi's qualification is, the definition of a Nishkama Karma Yogi is that he is attached to liberation, but his heart is impure with material impressions.
Okay, but what's the nature of those material impressions? I thought that, like what can repression accomplish, right? Arjuna could not stay quiet in the forest because he was a kshatriya by nature. It means he was attached to his...
No, that's not what it means. It means he is attached to engaging in activities according to his... he is inclined to engage in particular type of material activities. That does not mean that does not mean there is attachment to particular duties. There is no attachment to particular duties. There is attachment to particular kind of material activities. That's all.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's what I was saying. Like fighting, right? Like he was a warrior. You know, if he were to go off into the forest and try to sit down quietly, he'll be fighting in his mind.
Yeah, you can say to some extent, yes.
So my conception is that, maybe misconception is that a Nishkam Karma Yogi, he's, because of his nature, his karmic nature, he is attached to performing certain kinds of activities, which he cannot artificially give up. But he is not attached to the fruits of those activities, right?
He is not attached to the material fruits of those activities. He definitely wants liberation, though. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So my question was that, you know, as we go from, because I'm seeing like Sakkama Karma Yoga and Nishkama Karma Yoga as like a kind of continuum, where the Sakkama Karma Yogi, he's you know, he may be pretty much, like, very full of material desires, the desire for enjoyment. And the Nishkam Karma Yogi, he is either completely done with those desires or almost done. So my question is, once a person reaches Nishkam Karma Yoga platform, mm-hmm. is it possible that you know, there's a continuum there? It's not that either you have all material desires or you don't, but can you enter into that Nishkam Karma Yoga platform while still having maybe some small desires for enjoyment, but you do have the aspiration for liberation, and you see these desires as impediments? You know, it's not that
what I mentioned here, right? Here, you see here, his heart is impure with material anarthas. So he has material desire in the form of anarthas, not in the form of cherished desires. His cherished desire is liberation. But he has anarthas, he has material desires in the form of anarthas. He may succumb to those anarthas. Mm-hmm. He may see it as succumbing, rather than he will not be happy when he engages in those activities.
Okay, yeah. Like, you know, the reason why I had to ask that is because I didn't know if those anarthas included, you know, desire for enjoyment. You know, in other words, I didn't know if that was just referring to attachment to activities, you know, and not also fruits.
No. That is not an anartha. That is, he has to have that attachment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, and the Sakam Karma Yogi, he has so much attachment that he doesn't even see his enjoyment of the fruits as like a succumbing. Because that's not his liberation, is not his goal. So he doesn't see that as a succumbing type thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's basically the thing I needed to clear up, that even in Nishkam Karma Yoga platform, you know, you have attachment to activities, and you also may have attachment to enjoying fruits, even though, you know, you see it as a succumbing.
Anarthas. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. Okay, one last question, because in exactly 2 minutes, I have my next class. So, Lalitangi Radha Mataji, if you can maybe quickly ask your question, maybe you will.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you so much for clarifying the gray areas, especially in the third chapter concerning Jnana Yoga and Karma Yoga. Now we can understand why, for everything, Prabhupada gives Bhakti Yoga as a conclusion and the purpose. And very nicely, you made the difference between what is required for Jnana and how Bhakti only faith is required. So my question is, we are preaching and going out for book distribution, and I don't know if, I mean, how do we check whether that person has faith or not? We have very less time to judge that. If they are interested to, if they are okay to buy, then we give the book. And then after that, what they do, we don't know. So anything could be offensive also could be done to them. So in that case, but we are all encouraged to, it's a out reach movement, book distribution and preaching. Even neophyte devotees are encouraged to do, and we see them that they are advancing. So how this happens, Prabhuji? Because when we do to a faithless person, and if he commits out of faithlessness some offense to the book that we are giving, our bhakti is affected. That's what I understand. So,
that is why, do the right thing and leave the right impression also. So, we have to distribute the book in a nice way. And when we see that the person is inimical, then you just move away. So, but if the person is not inimical, you hand over
you hand over the book to him. If he has interest and faith in it, he will read it. If not, he will keep it aside and someone else may read it. Or some other time, or he may himself read it once he gets some faith due to accumulation of some Sukriti through some association of devotees. So, but the problem comes when we tell some lies and try to distribute the books or force that person to take the book like that, then it becomes a problem.
Yeah, okay, Prabhuji. Thank you. So is there, general practical way to find out how a person is faithful or faithless?
You should be willing to spend time with that person and then understand that person, Mataji. There is no quick fix way of understanding it. We don't have X-ray eyes, if you're asking me, is there a quick fix way of, an X-ray vision where I look through and directly I can see the heart of that person, whether he has what kind of faith he has, whether he has faith or not. That is not possible. The only thing is we have to spend time with that person and slowly allow that person to open his heart to us, and then it's possible.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji, and thank you so much for the patiently answering all the questions. Your answers and your association are amazing. Always.
I'm sorry, Mataji. Actually, I was a little bit impatient because I'm already 1 minute late for my next class. So if you please allow me, I will have to rush now.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Thank you for the beautiful class. As you said, you have another class. So, dear devotees, let us pay our obeisances to Prabhuji. Prabhuji, you can unmute everybody, I think, because nobody can unmute themselves. Thank you. Radhe, Radhe.
Thank you so much, Prabhuji.
Thank you for the session.
Thank you. We end the call here, dear devotees.
Hare Krishna.